You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right, welcome to the Beer Tour Guy Show, episode 23. How exciting to get into May this year and start a podcast and talk about beer. That's all I do. So for the next hour, I got the fine folks from Downey Brewing Company here for episode 23. And I'm your host, Steve Johnson. I'm going to ask them a few questions, and we're going to just see where it goes. It's just that simple. So, okay, gentlemen, why don't you introduce yourselves, and we'll just jump right into it.
All right. How about you start here?
Okay, I'm Dean Downey, the father of the brewery, so to speak.
Father of the brewery, I like that. I didn't even write it like that in my notes. Father of the brewery.
Yeah.
And Godfather.
So that's me.
And then I'm Danny Downey. I founder, marketer, whatever. I do what needs to be done.
You're the guy doing the videos.
Yes, I'm the guy doing the videos as well. Out there selling the beer, making the beer, cleaning stuff up.
I love it. That's why I love interviewing folks where it's a family business, because you do everything, right? Including Dean drinking a PBR.
Yeah.
And Dan, you and I drinking Kirkland Signature. Let's see, what did you get? Did you get the IPA or is that the pale?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I got an APA here.
Oh, I'm American sorry. APA. Ale. Yeah. So for folks out there, if you've ever been to Costco, they always have that mixed case of Kirkland Signature craft beer. Mm-hmm. So some of those were sitting in the cooler here at the Podcast Detroit Studios in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. So we grabbed a couple of those to do a little day drinking while we're talking here.
Hell yeah.
And they're pretty basic, I'd say.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what you would expect. It's a pretty low price point. I'm trying to remember what those are priced at. Like, if it's a $20 case, I'd be surprised. I think it's that. Maybe it's less.
I don't know.
But whatever. We'll take it. I mean, I always take free beer.
I think that's the best kind, free and cold, right?
Cold and free is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. So the refrigerator was working. So we're good with that. Plus, you got at least we got lots of caffeine here, too, which is always funny. That's how you know, Comic-Con dudes run this place, because there's like caffeine and Red Bull everywhere, and gamers are in here. And
yeah, you know.
Doing all that stuff, right?
Also important.
Okay, so why don't you guys tell me your story here? I've been lucky enough to take folks into your brewery on some of my Motor City Brew Tours before, and I can't wait to do that again. So I know a little bit of your background story, but for our listeners out there, why don't you guys kind of start from the beginning? How about that?
Yeah, for sure. Maybe I'll start, and then if you want to jump in, you come up with something clever and.
All right. Something clever. Unless he comes up with something clever.
Yeah, you got a good joke or something, throw it in. I would say our story starts back maybe 2013, 2014. We kind of had the idea of a Downey Brewing Company, and then we started kind of doing a little market analysis, talking to friends, family, and we came up with an idea. Okay, we're going to do this thing. Let's, you know, kick it off with a Kickstarter. You know, that's kind of when those were popular back in, you know,
and those
14.
Were kind of new at that point.
Yeah,
I totally remember when you guys did the fundraising campaign. Yeah. I thought, oh, wow, brewery doing this. And so, I'd only maybe seen that a few times at that point.
It was relatively new at that point. We brewed up 18 different batches of beer. I think we, you know, invited everyone we knew, and we threw up a Kickstarter campaign, and we threw it at the location where the brewery was to be. At the time, though, it was my grandfather's business and, you know, still running, still operating. And it was just a back section of a warehouse. It was kind of some unused space. And my brother and I and my pops kind of talked him into, hey, you know, you're not using this space back here. Would you mind if we set up shop? And he agreed. The rent is $1 a year. So that helped us.
That's my best part of the story. Right there.
Plus all the beer he could drink.
I
mean, he's Irish, so, you know, he does a little damage there.
Okay.
But, you know. So, yeah, we had a successful Kickstarter end of 2014. Took 2 years to do the licensing regulation, and our grand opening was 2016.
So November 2016, kind of open up the garage door, so to speak.
Yeah, very literally. Well, we didn't open it in November, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah, it was the 5th of November.
Yeah.
So
right?
Remember the 5th of November, because County Brewing opened that day.
Yeah, I was going to just say it that way. Yeah. Totally. See, you said something clever.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, we just kind of hit the ground running from there. We started with a three-barrel system, just 2 3-barrel fermenters. Our plan was to distribute around Metro Detroit. We're like, this is a weird location. No one's going to come here. Way more people came than we anticipated. So we were only able to serve just the little garage area. And then by April of 2017, we got another fermenter, and that was just kind of still covering the tap room. We hovered around still kind of maybe a few places we started to distribute, but then around our one-year mark, we bought two more six-barrel fermenters. And that, I think we were with, you know, that much, you know, capacity, we were finally able to build some inventory. And then about May of last year was when we really started hitting in on the outside sales. And we're maybe in about 25 bars now.
That's awesome. Got a lot of them listed on the website. So for folks who are interested, go to DowneyBrewingCompany.com and you can learn more about all of that stuff, right? And all the outlets that it's at. Or ask for it when you're at a better beer bar if you're in the metro area.
I guess we should say it that way.
That's good, yeah.
Right?
Where's that Downey at?
I just heard them on the Beer Tour Guy show. That Beer Tour Guy is pretty awesome, right?
That's right.
So what's it been like developing this as you guys have been moving along the last couple of years then? Like, what are things that you know now that you wish you knew as you were starting the journey? Why don't we ask that?
I don't know. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. There's so much that you don't know going into it, but I think you just got to plow forward and, you know, see where the world takes you. You know, you're not going to – all the green lights are not going to be green the whole way on the journey. So you're going to run into some, like, obstacles along the way.
Give me some examples.
Well, I mean, the first one I can think of is, you know, not having enough beer to, you know, serve outside.
It's amazing how many breweries, even now with so many breweries that are open, it's so hard to guess that.
Yeah, it is.
Just go in and say, I should have this size system and this should handle what I think I'm going to get in here. Like, that's the question, right?
Well, a part of it too is being the brewer is you got to anticipate out 4 or 5 weeks.
Forecasting.
And, you know, your guesses aren't always right. And then a couple of times, you know, one of the things that we do in our brewery is we're very self-critical of our quality. And kind of the running joke is if we have a beer that we don't like, it's Dan, John, me, and the sewer rats, the only ones that will taste it. And even Jim Cook said that if you're not willing to let go of some of your beer, you're not worried, you know, you're not concerned enough about your product. So we've had some that have gone down. And so then when you only had like two fermenters going.
Right. I got you. Affects it instantly.
Yeah. And then you got eight.
Not instantly. It's like 4 to 5 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
4 to 5 weeks later.
It'll bite you in
your head. It's instantly.
It'll bite you in the butt about a month and a half later.
Okay.
So now with having five, it's a little bit easier, but still, you know, you got to kind of anticipate out what you might, you know, project that someone's going to like.
Yeah, and then with the five fermenters, I think that is a better way. It ended up, we just have a three-barrel system, but we're able to brew a larger variety rather than if we had maybe like a six-barrel and just like two fermenters, you know, so we can kind of like pick and choose and develop new beers along the way and kind of see which ones people are sort of gravitating towards. And then, you know, if that is more popular, then we'll start brewing it on the larger scale.
Sure. Yeah, whenever you see much larger breweries, they always seem to have two systems, right? They have that smaller system and the larger system, and that's why.
Yeah, that's
those
us.
Things.
You see our smaller system right now.
Yeah, then, you know, exactly, right? So that's exactly what I meant. I was going to say Brew Detroit, for example. You guys remember Brew Detroit, the contract brewery?
Yep.
They have a 100-barrel system and 300-barrel fermenters, I believe.
Something like that, yes.
And then they have like a small pilot system, which I don't know. That might even be 10-barrel.
No, I think it's two.
The two is the pilot? I don't remember.
The Nano, I think they call it.
Yeah, oh, the Nano. That's right. You got it. Yeah, and that's like super automated, fancy stuff. I've been through there a bunch of times. I take people to that brewery a lot. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always look at them as an interesting example of that because we'd be in their tasting room and they have like a lot on draft in there. And they would have funny names for certain things. I'm like, oh, you're testing this for a customer, but you can't really tell us that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why they do that. So it's nice that you guys can now brew a little more. Are there plans to even acquire more?
Soon. I think what our next step would be probably is like another 6-barrel fermenter. So we have 3 of the 3-barrel size and 2 of the 6-barrel size.
Okay.
And then we kind of are walking down a road now where we're splitting our beers into some of them that we're going to have year-round kind of as flagships, and then some of them are seasonals. So the larger beers or the flagships are going to be brewed on the larger system.
Gotcha. Sorry, adjusting the mic.
No worries.
And then to balance that part of the brew house, so we got the three-barrel side of the brew house, and then we have the 6-barrel. And really, for me, I think it works out best to have 3 of them because it takes about 3 weeks to kind of go through the whole system and then get it to the bright tank. So if you got like A, B, and C on the 3-barrel side and then D, E, and F on the 6-barrel, you can constantly have brews going through there, and there's no hangups.
Right. So, Dean, so you were a homebrewer for many years before you started this, correct? What originally got you into homebrewing?
Well, it was actually Sam Adams. It was the Boston Lager.
So Jim Cook, that's why you quoted him, like he was your brother there?
So there's a lot of things that came out. So, he was craft brew, and then the homebrewing kind of all in the early 90s really started to take off, and I think that was part of it. But I was drinking Bud. Or Bud Light. Pretty much Budweiser was my one. And I don't remember exactly how much it cost me. It was either $3 or $4 for a six-pack. And I got a six-pack of, this Sam Adams, and it was really good, but it was like $6. And it was like,
I had $6.
Yeah, but that, that was 25.
But then that was a lot of money. I totally get it. I get it. I'm not messing with
you. Yeah, but it's, it was about double or significantly more than the other one. And I was reading in a magazine, and I'm not sure which one it was, but my wife asked, what would you like for Christmas? And I saw this brew your own beer kit. So I started that, the plastic bucket, the extract and all that, and it just kind of grew from there.
So you knew you wanted to drink better beer, said, hey, I could make that.
Yeah, and then, back then, any kit that you would have gotten was better than anything that was out on the shelf. I mean, things have changed a lot. I mean, now I'm one of the, you can go to almost any grocery store and get just hundreds of, well, I don't know,
sure,
but a lot, several varieties of good craft beers.
Do you think that that's led to less people homebrewing today than they used to? I've heard this before, and I always like to ask people that started kind of in a heyday when there was less variety, right? You did it almost out of necessity.
Yeah.
And nowadays, it's like you might do it because you think it's fun to do it, but then you were doing it because you wanted to drink good beer and you couldn't get it elsewhere. Now I could go to my gas station and I can get great beer.
Well, and there are people that come into the brewery that say, I used to do it all the time, home brewing, but there's so many good breweries around. I don't want to spend 6 or 8 hours making a batch of beer. And then when you have that batch of beer, it's 5 gallons and that'll last you a while. Whereas if you go to the breweries, you might have, we have 8 on tap. Some have, a little bit less, some have more, but you can have all this variety, and you just have to drive up there and drink it. And, sometimes people at the
home. That sounds like a good public service answer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or you take an Uber.
Yeah, or you should take an Uber and be safe. Yeah. That's what we really meant. Yeah. But I get your point, dude.
Yeah. So from a brewer standpoint, just don't do it at home.
Yeah.
Right?
So they'll, they'll do that. And, it'll cost you sometimes $50 to make a batch, sometimes less, sometimes more.
I think a fair amount of interest in homebrewing still, though. Especially like what I've seen. I don't know if there was always the case, but like homebrewing clubs.
Sure, there's definitely a lot of homebrewing clubs, and I've been fortunate enough to meet lots of folks in clubs and hang out with clubs before.
We just had a homebrewing club in this past Saturday. They're brewing up a beer with us, and it's a unique experience experiment. It was the same wort, and we put, nine different yeast strands in it.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to tell them a little bit more about that.
So that's a Ford brew club. So it's affiliated with Ford Motor Company. They have selected
like
that. It's Fermental Order of Renaissance Draftsmen.
Holy crap. Okay.
And so they come to our brewery every other month to have their meeting, and then they, of course, sample my beer, and we can sample theirs too. They had changed the law some time ago, several years, that you could actually bring it into the brewery.
Right.
So anyway, we had been talking about this experiment for about a year, and so we finally did it on Saturday. We made a very simple pale ale-style beer, and we inoculated with 9 different strains of yeast. And next month, I think it's going to be June 9th, that we're going to have kind of an open house. It's going to be ticket sales, and you'll get a sample of all these different yeast strains. It's the same wort, nothing like, so it's the same grains, it's the same hops. The only thing that's different is the yeast, and that's to show you the profile that each one of these yeasts.
Oh, how unique.
Yeah.
What an interesting way to learn.
I've heard and read that anywhere from 30% to 50% of the taste comes from the yeast. I'm not really sure. For me, it's exciting just to see what that's like, some mental notes. I mean, for one strain, like a Hefeweizen yeast, I can't put that in any other beer other than a Hefeweizen, because that is the profile that it's so strong that – that's a Hefeweizen.
Sure.
And it's the yeast that does most of that, most of the flavor there. I mean, I do a raspberry rattler that has a very similar grain and hops bill, but it doesn't taste anything like that.
I like your raspberry red. I usually have that when I'm in. Oh. If you have it on draft.
That's one of the flagships now. So yeah, we should always have that one.
Versus like the, you know, the lineage summer shandy ish stuff, which is just not.
Yeah, a little too that. Sweet, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. So what if so then you, let's see, was your brother?
Yeah, my brother.
Your brother started home brewing at MSU a bit, right?
Well, yeah.
There's a story there too.
Okay, well, let's get that then. Let's get that on. We're recording.
Yeah.
So, you know, John was watching me. He probably pretty much all of his life would remember me brewing because I think I started about 94, 95, but I think it was about 94. So he would have been 4 years old then. Never really gave it any interest, never even paid attention to me. Well, his second year up at State, he was at his own apartment, and he happened to be home a weekend that I was brewing. And all of a sudden, he's like, well, how do you do this? And how do you do that? And I'm going, what are you doing? He goes, no, what? You know, he's just looking at it. I go, John, I know what you're up to. What? What? I said, you're gonna go make beer at State. Oh, I don't. I go, John, come on. I said, if you do it, you know, just keep your mouth shut. Don't tell anybody. And if you do it, keep it inside your house. You should be fine. And I don't know how often he brewed when he was up there, but a few times,
yeah.
I heard he did a lot.
Yeah, there was some good stuff.
Well, there was probably a lot of volunteers.
Testers, for sure.
I'm sure.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that so then he did his undergrad in four, and then he stayed on one more year for a master's, and so he was there for 4 years. And my guess is in his 4 years, he probably brewed about as much as I did in 20.
Oh, wow.
I don't know for sure. I mean, I never got a straight answer because I'm the dad.
Well, a lot of things.
That sounds pretty typical.
It's a little hazy college times, yeah. You know.
But he's John's really good at that. So
yeah.
He's got some really good recipes out there. So, again, it was, you know, the homebrew type thing. And he actually makes the Snake Banisher Stout. I mean, he brought that back.
That one is original from Michigan State.
Yeah.
And then I think there's a couple beers that we have now that sort of developed while he was there, and then he's like since tweaked them a little bit, maybe changed the hop bill or whatever. But yeah, I think that was a good experimental stage.
Well, yeah, the Snake Banisher, when he brought it home, he had four bottles, and the three of us, John, Dan, and I, were each got a bottle, and I'm going, wow, this is really good.
Yeah.
Now, do I drink it real fast and grab the next one, or do we, you know, what do we do with that with that odd man out bottle?
Nice to know you're professional about it. You're thinking about that right away.
Yeah, it was really good. It's one of my favorites, and we bring that out for St. Patrick's Day.
Okay,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice one for that.
Wow. So I keep messing with my mic today. I don't know why that is. So what a family operation when you really break this down. So the three of you plus your wife is involved in it.
Yeah, she does the admin stuff a lot.
Yeah, she's pretty heavily involved now. I mean, when we first started, it was, I think, mostly like, you know, myself, my dad, and my brother. And
then,
you know, John's a CPA by trade. He's the only one of us that still has a full-time job.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. And so my mom, actually, I think, is a little more on board than him at this point.
But she has a regular job, too, correct?
Not, well, she sort of like a part-time work. She does stuff with Wayne State.
Yeah. Okay, I don't think I ever asked that when I was interviewing you guys for that Our Detroit article.
Yeah, well, she had
At that point, she was working full-time.
Oh, she was. So maybe I did learn that then. Okay.
And her hours were easily 50 hours a week, sometimes more.
Holy crap, okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of times she was in her office until 9 o'clock at night. So
I don't know. I work for myself, so I'm always working.
Yeah,
so
that's how I feel.
I mean, you guys run a business, so you're always working. It's funny that when people say, I work blank hours a week, I go, I never even think about it.
I was like, I've never counted them.
Yeah.
I probably work 30 hours on the weekend.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, when my dad shut his business down, we kind of did this more, you know, full time. Well, I mean, we were always doing it, but this gave us more time to do it. But one of my old customers came in. He happened to be going to Greenfield Village and wanted to stop by the brewery to see how I was doing and stuff like that. So he goes, hey, so what's it like to be retired? I said, well, I'm really not.
I'm not really retired.
I'm not really retired. I'm running this business here. I'm working at that point probably 10 to 12 hours a day. And I was taking maybe 2 days off a month. He goes, no, really. What's it like to be retired? I go, yeah, that's really what it's like. I mean, I try to take a little bit more off than that. I can't keep up that pace of, you know, 10, 12 hours a day and not take any time off. You got to have a little bit just to rest, you know.
I relate to that. Mm-hmm. I'd say the first couple of years I ran the tour business, we started wrapping it up. We were taking it on to like I would do two bike tours in a day, right? And I'd be drained. And then I'd get to a Monday and be like, oh, I'm so sick of doing this, you know. And I had to learn balance. I think everybody, when you run a business, and it's not always obvious to you, right?
No,
like, I'm sure you could look back at now and go, wow, why was I doing it quite like that? Like, I needed.
Yeah. Well, it's way different because you're self-structuring everything.
Yep. So true.
And
it's not like there's a boss that said, come in 9 to 5.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's certain things that need to be done every week, but they don't necessarily need to be done at a certain time. So you can kind of pick and choose when. And then it's like, sometimes if there's stuff to do, you're like, oh, I want to do it. I want to finish it. But then maybe you run yourself too thin. And then, you know, the next couple of days, you're toast.
Yeah. I mean, I'll wake up late, or I'll wake up super early in the morning, and I had 5 things on my mind I wanted to do. And I'll just get out of bed and start doing it. You know, today I was at the gym working out, and I thought of something I didn't have on my hit list, and I get home and took a shower faster. I'm like, all right, do this right now, you know, and just knock it out. And that's how your brain processes sometimes. In my case, I don't, you know, I have a couple tour guides, but I do everything. So I don't have it maybe divvied out quite how you guys have it. But I guess at the end of the day, you guys all probably chip in when it's needed, right? That's the glory of it. It's all family.
It's all a team effort. And then, I mean, there's like little buckets that we kind of like focus on more of our energy. And then,
like, the sales side has really been what you focused on, correct?
Yeah. Sales and marketing is largely my wheelhouse. My mom is
Official videographer. That's pretty
Yeah, official videographer.
Why'd you put that on
now? I'm doing this. It's a large part of marketing. And like, that's kind of like a long form video content. And then from there, I'm able to grab smaller pieces of videos that I can split up into the other media platforms, or your Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And then, you know, it's a good way to promote the upcoming events, and it kind of draws people into the conversation. And it's a good way, I think, to build a brand all around.
I think it's fun. I love watching it. One, it makes me say, you guys are having fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that gets me excited. So like, as a fan or a customer in the background, looking like, oh, hey, they're trying to have fun.
Yeah.
Versus like if I went into, I don't know, a chain brewery.
Yeah.
And it was like red, white, and blue beer, whatever, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
it's
just
another restaurant in my mind. You know, I don't get excited about that. But I'm excited to come into your brewery, and
because
I've been seeing what you're up to.
That. There's like a lot of energy. They come in there. There's something about it. They're like, they just feel good. It's like,
well, it's also the cycle of where we are, I think, with craft beer in Michigan, is that, you know, there's a lot of breweries that started in those mid 90s and then the early 2000 breweries. And now you guys are on that new wave of breweries that come in with like new energy, new ideas, whatever. And that gets people excited because they're thinking, oh, my brewery's not doing any of that anymore. And we're not here to diss other breweries or anything. It's not like
No, not at all.
It's just that in the cycle of a business, like eventually.
Yeah, the, you know,
you might seem
busts.
Boring someday too, right?
Yeah,
but for now, it's not that way.
We're just getting going now.
Yeah, like I'm 10 years into my tour business, and like I relaunched my branding this year and the website, and I have new tours out there, and I try to like reinvigorate what I'm doing, and that stuff's hard as you get a lot of years in, right? It's just like, oh, another new beer recipe, oh my god, you know, I gotta think of that. You know, and after a while, like, your head will be like, oh, I can't process new ideas, you know.
Yeah,
so for now it's fun, and
it's incredibly fun.
You should run with that and be excited about it.
Oh, I'm super excited about it. And it's fun. I mean, I graduated from state with a marketing degree, but I think like everything I learned, this was in 2012, from like that is out the window. Like the market has changed so much now that it's like I'm basically like kind of learning on the fly as I'm going, like all these different marketing tools. And it's now I'm starting to understand it a lot better, actually, like being in it day to day doing it. And I think that's really the best. That's how I learned. That's the best way to learn. And you know,
it's always
the
best way to learn.
It's super fun for me, even in just the marketing world. But then we've got everything else going on, and the beer and the family. It's a good.
Yeah, my background. Maybe you didn't know that. My background was sales and marketing too, and that's what my MBA was in. And I also taught for 5 years at Macomb Community College.
Oh,
but I taught
okay.
while I was running this business. So I was an adjunct professor of marketing there, and I had a couple different classes. But one was like small business marketing, and you would have these textbooks that, you know, the department had set up for the class. But all that stuff is dated to a certain degree. Like, textbooks are never
really
updated.
By the time you get into a textbook, it's too late.
It's dated,
Well,
so
the
it's
way things are moving now, it's moving so fast.
It's so true, right?
Yeah.
And students know that. So you have, like, these, you know, 18 to 24-year-old range of students. Typically, that's most of your students.
Yeah.
Because it's a community college. And they're up on everything, right? And they're excited about new ideas, and they don't want stodgy old stuff. So it was a constant challenge of okay, so how much of the book do I stick with? Because I'm supposed to do that with, hey, I'm going to give you an example from what I dealt with today before I came to class. And then you would find students were interested in that. And then it would almost seem like I was talking about my business all the time, but really I was giving sales and marketing examples.
It's kind of like real life advice.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I think that's the best they probably picked up on that.
It was fun, and it honestly made me fine tune what I was doing. Because, you know, some 18-year-old guy or girl be like, well, Professor Johnson, why aren't you doing blank then? You just said this. And I'm like, huh.
Yeah, why am I not doing that?
Why am I not doing that, you know? And then I'd be driving back in my car after class, you know, on night class, and be like, when I get back home, I'm going to, like, you know, totally do what that student just said.
Well, that's some real-time feedback, you know?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of fun, you know? And that your customers must do the same thing with you.
Yeah,
if a beer's off or they watched a video and said, you should try blank, right? You should try this beer or you should do this from video.
Yeah, we get some of that.
Yep.
And then, I think so, right?
Yeah.
That's what's fun about having a family-based business, a smaller business, and you've started to build this community of customers you have in your East Dearborn, right? That's what I say, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a West Dearborn.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's one city. Yeah. Although people call it East Dearborn and West Dearborn.
I think you guys told me that the first time, and then I joke like, I didn't really know that. Okay. Yeah. I guess it makes sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I live in Berkeley, and Berkeley's like 2 square miles, and that's it. So there is not one. Actually, in Berkeley, what you say is 12 Mile and Coolidge is
right. You got to do the lines.
So you basically say I'm north of 12 Mile or I'm south of 12 Mile.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right. I'm north of 12 Mile. And I don't know if that means I'm cooler. I'm not sure.
Who knows?
But that's how people look at it, right? So do people look at that with Dearborn in the same way?
I don't think
kind
so.
Of? No, not really?
Not really noticed that. Yeah. But
where do you see your customers then coming from?
All over.
Yeah.
All over Metro Detroit. A lot. Within the local area, because I think we are in a little bit of a black hole where there's not a ton of breweries in our little ecosystem. So we get a lot of people kind of from the Downriver area and Dearborn Heights.
Taylor,
Allen Park. And then also
– all those areas that don't have breweries.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously people that are – you had a downtown where like we're really close to downtown Detroit, and then even as people from the east side, they're coming, you know, making a day trip over here, and they're like, they just like a cool spot, why not?
We'll check it out. We're just right off of 94, so that makes it easy for people to get in and get out. Kind of a little challenging to find our place.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit
follow your
I would say look for the red door.
Yeah, I always kid around if you think you're lost, you're probably there.
You probably figured it.
Yeah, the red door and the flags.
Well, see, we were going to buy a sign to put up, like a big quality sign. And then at that point, this is when we were like way underserved on beer. A fermenter and a sign were the same price. So we're like, all right, well, we're going to go with the fermenter.
I think you made the right call.
Yeah.
I know you'll put a flag out there once
in a while.
Well,
we have two flags now.
Yeah, hey.
So.
That's what I caught last time. Okay. Although I've been there a few times, so I know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. Even my driver found it right.
Yeah.
Although I was on the front seat making sure.
Yeah.
And I was a little too early, clearly. But
yeah, I mean, everyone's got a GPS now, so just punch in the address. And
that's kind of the key to everything. When I first started doing the tours, I'd have to print out directions ahead of time and hand them to drivers, bus drivers,
MapQuest,
right? Actually, it definitely was MapQuest when I first started. Eventually, you kind of transition to Google Maps, and then eventually we all had smartphones, and now the driver's just like, dude, just give me the address.
Yeah.
What's the name of that place? I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay. So different.
But when you're talking about the community, there is – our mug club is named – I don't know if you remember this, but it's called the Dean's List.
I did know that.
So sometimes people are like, hey, I finally made the Dean's List.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah.
It was actually – we were drinking. We're trying to come up with a name.
Of course you were drinking when you came up with
that. We were drinking Barley Pops, I guess.
Yeah.
Barley Pops.
And so anyway, I was just kidding. I was trying to make a joke, and they're like, wow, you know, that works. I'm going, no, I'm just kidding. But I think I have 100 new friends. And when you started out this business, you know, we thought about, you know, where to buy the equipment, where to get this, you know, ingredients and things like that. You got all this paperwork type things and you're trying to figure it out. And one part that I didn't even really I think about is all the people that I met. And I have so many nice customers. If they don't come in, I feel bad, you know. And some of them will always come in like, you know, Thursday. I know this guy's going to come in, and, you know, Fridays they're going to come in. And you get to talk to them and you get to know them a little bit. And then it's really nice to see the guys, the people that are on the Dean's List, they get to know each other. And
probably, I love it when like two Dean's List members make friends. It's like the coolest thing in the world to see.
Yeah. So they'll sit there and, you know, they want like a lot of times it's maybe a husband wife team or something like that. Maybe just one will stop by, and well, they're never alone because they know 10 people, and it's kind of a lot of fun.
I think that's what a lot of people seek, though.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the modern day small brewery has replaced some of the corner bars in that respect.
Yeah, I was
where people would get that from a corner bar, a local's corner bar. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. As opposed to a full fledged restaurant brewery, where that's a different vibe because people are going there to eat.
Yeah, it's more like a dinner. Or a
it is.
Down
it,
or
it's like a I'm going out to have dinner and I had some good beer, and that's great. Yeah. Right? I'm not dissing that.
No, no.
But it's a different experience
for sure.
Like we tend to, as we pick breweries, tend to go to places like yours for that reason, because you can usually pick up on that.
Yeah, there's like my a real community feel
like
to
I bring in new people that never been there, and that's what they want to see typically, right? They're excited about that. The beer's a bonus.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is a cool setting. Oh, and I'm getting good beer, and these people are cool.
Yeah, it's a triple package.
triple package. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to make a good product, but I think the people, the community is up and foremost, and, you know, it's a family business, so obviously I think that's really what shows through, and the energy, the fun that we're having with it.
Yeah, like this past weekend, besides the homebrew stuff, let's see what you had, like free food?
We did a free brunch on Saturday. We did a garage sale on Sunday. Our bike club is on
Thursdays, right?
And we do trivia Wednesdays.
Okay.
Yeah. So, last weekend was
a busy week. Yeah. I remember looking at it. You guys had a lot. I think I looked at your email blast you popped out too. Yeah. I'm like, oh, a lot of stuff.
Yeah. A lot of happenings. Here.
But that's awesome. That must make it it doesn't go slow.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I feel like, you know, there's always something new. So, like, that weekend is closed, and now we're kind of like eyes forward looking at, you know, what's coming up next, and the summer's developing, and we got a bunch of new beers. And
the more years you guys do it, the better out you get on the planning side.
Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
I definitely plan a lot further out with what I do. I try to be almost a year at times with what I'm doing, but that takes like years of. And, you know, you never have that perfect, but it gives you things to shoot for and work out.
And
towards.
I'm sure, like, some of these things that you have planned out, maybe it's, like, something that you've done before in the past, kind of.
Definitely,
so
right?
You're like, okay, that worked well. I want to do it again. I kind of,
exactly.
Like,
and I think that's what will happen with you guys, the more years you have under your belt with this. I'm like, oh, we tried this, and that worked really good, and this is how we could make it better next year. And you make those mental notes, and then you say, okay, we're going to do this again next year in June.
Yeah.
And then you get customers, and they start like, okay, I can't wait for that again.
Yep.
I think the shortest time frame we should have on anything is about a month.
Yeah, a month or two months, I think, is like enough lead time.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, people want to plan around
great
things
like that.
Well, they've
got like plans too, so you can't just like throw somebody on it like, hey, next week we're going to, you know, do a free brunch. Maybe they've already got something going on.
When I first started doing bike tours, and we weren't really sure how that would progress with our business, we just threw a few dates out there and ran with it. But by the second season, people liked it so much. By the second season, people really early on were like, when are you putting out that schedule?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'm still trying to get other tour guides to do this. You
right.
know? And now I literally communicate my bike tour season right after New Year's.
Okay, cool.
For like the whole next year. And people will check it out. It doesn't mean people automatically buy them.
Yeah.
But they check it out.
Like, see when the dates are.
Yeah, people, because then I'll see someone on a walk-in tour, bus tour, like in the first quarter, and they'll be like, hey, man, I checked out your bike tour schedule. That looks cool. I can't wait to try some of those this summer.
You right. know? Sweet.
But if I wait until like May to post stuff like that, it's just a different game.
Yeah, for
you know?
Sure.
And it's always nice to have it all pre-sold, but that's nowadays it's not really how it works. There was a time when I definitely would pre-sell tons ahead of time. There's just more. There's so many other things for people to do now.
Yeah,
right?
it's a lot of competition. Like a very, very competitive market.
Yeah, I'd say so many years ago that probably wasn't quite the case.
Mm-hmm.
But by planning out, that gives you that next step up, I think.
Yeah,
an advantage.
You can reach more people. You got more time.
Like, I wish, you know, my challenge with a lot of breweries is I can't go to your thing on Saturday because I'm running tours on Saturday.
Right.
So there's a lot of that stuff I unfortunately miss where if it's like a weekday thing or maybe a Friday thing, you know, I get a shot at it. Like, like the brewery that I'm a regular at because I live in Berkeley, so I'm a Mug Club member at Royal Oak Brewery. Their Mug Club party was on Sunday.
Cool.
So, and it was nice. So I got to bike there with my wife and then we drank a lot. Right. And
sweet.
You shouldn't bike drunk. That's just, we'll just say that on the air.
Yeah, that's bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news bears.
Yeah. Definitely. So I'm not saying I biked drunk. I'm just saying
well, no,
I drank
of course
and
not.
I biked.
Yeah, two separate things.
Yeah, they're totally separate, mm-hmm. right? So, not okay, even, so bike know. Club. So your mom,
yeah.
right, was an avid biker? Are you?
Yeah, both of them.
Or both of us, yeah.
Oh, definitely. Sorry. Okay. So both of you. Okay. So that's where that idea came from?
Yeah. So Lynette and I, the night that we met, I was, you know, I was kind of, well, I really liked her. And but I,
it sounds like a longer story.
Yeah.
Now.
Oh yeah. There's a lot more to it that I'm not going to get into. But but what I would yeah, say, well, you know, on your free time, what is your favorite like outdoor activity you like to do? And she says, well, I really like bicycling. I'm going, well, that's I like a lot. It's my second favorite. I said, well, what's your second favorite thing to do? She goes, I like to ski. I'm going, well, that's my first favorite thing to do. And I'm going. That's a good idea because they'll never conflict.
What's
with
the odds those two things?
Yeah,
that's
I don't know. It was predestined.
Wow.
I guess.
Yeah,
I that's sweet.
So, and, I mean, I enjoy them both. So it's just I think I probably it's like skiing a little bit more than bicycling.
Yeah, but I remember growing up, you guys would always do all sorts of like bike stuff too.
Yeah,
I mean, like those pedal across the
yeah.
Michigan
palms and other things. Yeah,
yeah. I remember when I did the Hour Detroit interview and we started talking. I could have had a whole separate article talking about that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, they just got a lot of interest in bike, and then biking and beer go together. Well, not you know as we talked about, not together, but
yeah.
you know,
yep.
but yeah, they do. There's a community there, and so people go out, will run like. You know, bike 10 miles and we'll come back to the brewery, have a beer. So
who sets that route then?
It changes a little bit week to week. We've got a few regular riders that lead it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice.
I think we're going to do a little different every week, but there'll be some routes that overlap.
Yeah, just kind of coming in and coming out because there's just, you know, only so many ways coming down Prospect.
Sure, I would think so, yeah.
But the nice thing that I like and that I just recently found out about maybe last year or the year before is Detroit itself has 190 miles of just bike lanes. So once you get down in there, you know, you're kind of protected, and that is really nice. So and we're going to have a couple other bike rides. One of the things that we're talking about doing sometime in the summer, although we haven't put it down anywhere, is on a Saturday or Sunday, start at the brewery, go to Belle Isle, do a loop, and then come back to the brewery.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So
people love biking around Belle Isle.
Yeah,
so yeah,
this weekend I'm doing my Prohibition History route.
Isn't the Grand Prix coming around?
Yeah, so you have to.
Yeah, we're not going to do it that weekend. There's no way we can compete.
You have to know the workaround with the setup and takedown of the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So like over the years, so like this weekend my Prohibition History route leaves Midtown and does a half loop of Belle Isle and comes back. Right,
okay.
That's a 15-miler. And I've been doing that one for, I don't know, six, seven years now. It's like the second route I ever developed, right? People love biking on Belle Isle.
Yeah, I love it too, man.
When we first started doing it, the city still owned Belle Isle.
Uh-huh.
Then the state took it over, and it was just like, you know, 180-degree turn.
Yeah. Right?
Like it went from kind of sketchy to clean and bathrooms that work and things
like that.
Yeah,
the state's done a really good job with
that. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a better story to tell now. I don't know, the people who were against the state taking it over.
Oh, it just needed to happen.
They must have disappeared or something now because you don't hear about them anymore, right?
But yeah, no, it's a great place to bike around. I did my first triathlon was on Belle Isle.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, and they're just like zipping around the outside loops like it. That was one of the coolest places I've biked.
It's laid out well for all of those activities. And what's great is those activities can be going on Belle Isle, and you could still personally go on Belle Isle because there's enough space to do
it.
It's
big, right?
That's what we found with bike tours is, well, even if a run's going on, they're not going to tell us we can't go on there.
Yeah, they've got like a driving range there now.
Pretty much the Grand Prix would be the only thing that couldn't
get on. Yeah, that you probably is going to get in the way of something.
Kind of. But they've even done a better job of that. Like we found we do our first – one of our early tours in May, we'll do one on Belle Isle, and then we'll wait until about 2 weeks post the Grand Prix. So the Grand Prix is what? The weekend after Memorial Day, I believe.
Okay, so early June.
Yeah. I don't hold me to this. 5th, 6th, something like that. That sounds right. 6th, 7th maybe.
I was on Belle Isle yesterday actually, and they were starting to set up the track already.
Yeah, they set up, but you're still they're pretty good if you're still able to get around. Like you probably were able to get around.
Yeah, it was pretty much still open to everyone. They were just started to set up like the stands and the track.
Yeah, people like seeing that. Like,
yeah,
if you get to bike by that. That's a different.
No, they view. They did a slow roll one time on they did the bike
track.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And there was a dude just jogging the track yesterday. You know,
no big
deal. Rocky,
just like Rocky.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you're just getting kind of smaller groups out when you guys do your rides? Is that
pretty typical? We'll
what's
see.
A average group size?
Well, last Wednesday was the first one.
Yeah, that's true.
We had about 100 people interested on Facebook, and I think it was going to be quite an event, but it was like a crazy-ass weather that day.
Totally.
It rained a lot.
Yeah.
So we still had about 10 to 12 people show up in
bike.
But, I mean, we're going to continue to do this every Thursday, and just we'll see how it grows.
People are weird of weather.
Yeah.
I mean, I told you, I did a charity event on Saturday out of Rochester Mills Beer Company called Cruising for the Trails that I've done for that's my seventh one, I think.
Okay.
And so they basically get a beer at the halfway point of the ride and a beer at the end point back at the brewery. So we had a bar at the halfway. So they rode the Clinton River Rail Trail, which you can hit in downtown Rochester. So you got the Clinton River Rail Trail, and you have the Pink Creek Trail that are in downtown Rochester.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So we used to do this at a Clubhouse BFD, and now we moved it into downtown. And we work with a nonprofit, which was Friends of the Clinton River Trail, and then they get proceeds from the event. So I'm donating $2,000 to that group.
Sweet.
And
great.
Then they raised another $1,000 on a raffle. So we raffled off one of the Detroit bikes, one of the cruiser bikes,
yeah.
The A-type ones.
Cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And everyone got beer. So I was telling people, I bought 400 pints of beer on Saturday.
Nice.
Right?
There you go.
That's a nice Saturday.
That's a big tab, right? So I'm sure my credit card company's like, what's going on here? You know, he's picking up some tabs.
It's been one hell of a party.
Yeah, it was a good party. So that was fun. Now, that was probably the lowest we've had on that before,
yeah.
But it was all because of the weather going in with all the rain. People are like, oh, I don't know.
Mm.
But actually, it was awesome on Saturday, even better on Sunday, but it was awesome on Saturday for a ride because it wasn't too hot. There wasn't really any wind.
Yeah,
right?
Sunday was beautiful.
We only did – it was only a 16-mile route. I mean
– right.
Yeah, so we've had as many as 500 on that before. And I've raised something. Yeah, I've raised – I don't know. I've raised north of 25,000 now for those two different trails down there, which has been really fun.
That's cool.
It's been an interesting format to kind of figure out. From a marketing standpoint, it's another way to present what I'm doing for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Get your name recognition out there.
Yeah. But now I have people that they love – like, okay, so the thing we changed this year was normally you went to a cider mill off the Pink Creek trail called the Pink Creek Cider Mill, and you got two donuts and a beer.
Oh.
Okay. Well, the trail was going to have some work done, so we didn't use that trail. We used the Clinton River Trail. So we didn't use the Pink Creek. We used the Clinton River, right?
Yeah.
So I work with both of the friends groups. So anyway, the comments I got back next day on the email follow-up were, I missed the donuts. I thought, oh my God, you know, like so many details. Yeah. So I got to work out to make this work.
Yeah.
You know, and that guy's like, I missed the donuts.
That one thing, man.
But I'll admit, I do too. Because like the previous year, we had 500 people when we did it. So big difference. That's what weather does. But
yeah,
big difference,
huge.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So I bought 1,000 donuts.
Uh-huh.
I bought 1,000 donuts from the actual cider mill. So like, they're making them, right? So like they're exhausted at the end of that. They bring in an extra machine for the day, and we have this, you know, roped off area, and we have, you know, a beer there. So everyone would get – last year it was like Griffin Claw beer. So it was like Griffin Claw beer and two fresh donuts. And the challenge with everyone on that is everyone kind of rolls up almost at the same time. Even though it's staggered starts, like it's not a mass start.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Everyone seems to still get there at the same time. So then the donut folks, you know, like they can't have 1,000 donuts magically fresh and warm.
No way.
At the same time.
Yeah.
It's like impossible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's always been our challenge. You know, they have two machines going, which they don't normally do, and extra staffing. And
yeah,
it's a wild thing. But the bike community is a fun community.
It is.
To deal with.
Yeah,
I feel lucky to have that as kind of part of my customer base and just friends that I've made from it, you know. So I kind of going back to what you said about having people on the Dean's List and just regulars at the brewery. When you add another element like biking into it, now you open that up to even more people to get excited about what you guys are doing in Dearborn.
There's so much like overlap too, where like especially like, you know, biking and beer, and you'll meet people, they have their own bicycle club or they're doing their own ride, and it's just everything's so interconnected.
People start sharing stories. Where'd you go ride? What brewery did you go to? Right. Now it's both, right?
Mm-hmm.
I went to this trail and I was able to go to this brewery. And that's how we've always approached most of our events is, okay, we know people want to ride and we know they want to get a drink. So if we could tie it into a place that's actually making beer, then boom, that's kind of the solution, right?
Yep.
So help facilitate that in a way that's kind of simple for the customer.
Right.
You know, you don't want to make it hard. Like, we give everyone a map, but at the end of the day, they don't really want to look at a map.
No.
You know what I mean? They just want to go ride and then magically, like, the place where they're going to drink is there, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so we try to figure that out in that way, you know. So at some point, I'd love to figure out maybe a larger ride with you guys.
Yeah.
I think that'd be cool. I know it was something we talked about, and I have a pretty full schedule. Someday, we're gonna figure that out,
we'll
right?
Yeah, we'll figure that out for
sure. Maybe I'll wait for you to build such a large audience that it'll be like simple, and then I'll cheat, right? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So what's next? So what are you guys thinking next? So new beer ideas, new beer recipes you've been working on?
A lot of times if I'm just watching TV, I'll go to the one of the sites that I formulate them, and I'll start saying, okay, I like this beer, and I'm going to make a recipe. So I have some in my mind what I want to do. One, I want to make another Radler this summer. And I want to be a grapefruit Radler.
Okay.
And
which is traditionally what a lot of the Radlers
are. Yeah, they
are.
And I'm still toying in my mind if I want the regular grapefruit that's more, you know, the yellow color, you know, or versus the pink grapefruit. And I think each one has its advantages and disadvantages. I mean, the pink one would add color and maybe a little more sweetness, where that tartness, I think, is what I really want to bring out, you know, up the CO2 level on it, more volumes of CO2 to get that crispness to make it pop.
Okay.
So I'm kind of, you know, playing with that in my mind. We got a brown that I got two of my employees that they help me with some of the production part, you know, cleaning and things like that. And they want to do a brown, so we got a brown recipe coming up.
I like to see that breweries seem to be doing brown ales again.
Yeah.
Sort of left for dead for a while.
Irish Reds.
Heck, even Kirkland Signature, what I'm drinking right here, came out for brown ales. Yeah. So that's telling you something, right?
Yeah.
But it's a style, like in my case, when I got into craft beer in the 90s, that was you drank a brown, a red, you know, a yellow.
Yeah.
And a dark. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you drank. Maybe a pale thrown in there.
Well, yeah, like craft
breweries
are making.
Then, that's what you did, right?
Like pilsners and lagers now, too.
Yeah.
You see a lot of craft breweries.
Where, like,
doing
all
that.
Of those were kind of, I don't want to say dead styles, just not as sexy. And now people are thinking about that again. Like, you know, I want to get back to just drinking a good beer, a good pilsner, a good easy lager.
We've got one on Pils right now online.
I saw that on your list.
Pils Royale, and then we got a Prospect Pils. Thing I like about that is it's just a nice, clean, simple beer. You can sit back and you can have, you know, a couple of them while you're in the tap room there, and you don't have to worry about, you know, drinking too much.
Right.
Where we've had some beers, our number one stout is usually 10%. It doesn't sell really overly well. It goes out the door like in bottles and growlers. That is a really hot seller, but inside.
No, you can only have one if you're somewhere to be.
That's true. You know, and it kind of depends on what I'm doing. Like if I'm coming in thinking I want to drink two or three beers, I can't drink something like that.
Right. Well,
that's true.
And so our summer kind of menu or projection is going to be lower ABV. Where then when we get in the fall and the winter, we tend to go the darker, heavier beers.
But that makes sense. You know, that's traditionally how I kind of cycle through and
kinda,
drink.
You know, go through the seasons. Same. I mean, to have a very heavy beer on a hot summer day is not appealing to me. But having a, you know, light, crisp beer that I can have two or three of them, fantastic. I love it.
I saw on your list you got a white stout on there.
Yeah, so that one is another one of our flagships. That one is
– I've had that before. Yeah. I know I have. You must have had that when I brought that group in there in November.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I'm sure
that
we did.
Right. Yeah.
That one, it's incredibly unique. And I think the reason why it is just because it's a white stout, you know, it kind of looks like a pilsner, but it tastes like a stout. People are not expecting that.
Yeah.
It surprises people.
If you were blindfolded and then someone – if you were blindfolded, took a sip – and they had a dark one and a light one there, and you said, okay, which one do you think it is? Everybody would go for the dark.
Every time.
Yeah. And it's like, I've had so many people kind of like look at the glass.
And there's also a lot going on, too. There's like chocolate and coffee and vanilla. So, you know, it just like, it was like, whoa, like, what is this?
I've had a few this in the winter here, and as we've gone into the spring that breweries have played with, I've enjoyed probably every one I've had.
Yeah.
Eastern Market Brewing has one.
Mm-hmm.
Rochester Mills has like a blonde. What are they calling it? A blonde
vanilla porter or something?
No, that's Atwater.
Yeah, vanilla.
It's a blonde milkshake stout, but that's not totally what the name goes by. He'll kill me for saying this wrong.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. It's really good. It's really a blonde coffee stout, kind of like a Bean Flicka Blonde from outside, sort of similar to that.
Yeah,
a little more lactose to it.
Yeah.
Right. He's not even using the stout word on it though, like you are. So it's a variant for sure.
Uh huh.
Have you guys played around with coffee and beer before?
I think that's the only one that we
So originally this started out, this is a John experiment where we had a traditional looking stout, you know, it was dark, and then we had the white stout. So we called them yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
So
the yang obviously was a lot more popular. I want to survive the test of time.
We were going to do that once a year, and then we brought it back up, and then people said, no, you got to always have that. You got to always have that. And then some of the outside customers.
That's
said,
how these flagships come to be. It's like people just are like,
the customers
you guys,
just
yeah.
say it.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Well, I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no,
you're not wrong.
Yeah.
They're not wrong.
Yeah. No. And, you know, they know what sells, and they know what their customer wants. And so if they run out, a lot of times their customers would be upset that they didn't get this particular one that they're looking for.
Now, you also are offering a cider. You pretty much always have a cider.
So I think like the ones that we're always going to have, it used to be, so our blonde, we had a raspberry rattler, our Mr. IPA, and the Yang. And then now we've kind of added to that list the Irish red and the cider.
Cider,
so,
yeah.
But I think the blonde's going to go away, and we're going to replace that with the Pilsner. And then that'll be kind of like our six that we're going to have as flagships, and then the rest of them are going to just be seasonals,
rotationals,
whatever.
Or one-offs.
One-offs, yeah.
Sure. Sure. Ah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Do you see that you're getting a lot of to-go business?
As far as growlers and 750s? Yeah, there's a decent amount of that. I would say a typical weekend, maybe that's 10 to 15, 10%.
That's pretty substantial.
Yeah. You got to always have that.
Sometimes as much as 20%. I think if we had cans to go, or if it was prepackaged, that would encourage more.
That's definitely the trend.
Yeah.
Right? I'd say I was just down – I was telling you guys before we started taping. I was down in Florida, St. Petersburg area, and all those breweries were less than 5 years old, and there were like dozens out there.
Yeah.
Every one of them had canned beer to go. Like
right.
What you would think, right? Mm-hmm. They did it right in there. And that was what people bought.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Well, one of the other things that we've been getting a lot, too, is what people will have a party at their house. We had some lady that came in that had a Kentucky Derby party, and she bought a 1/6 barrel of Raspberry Rattler. And, you know, so we have the gear there for them, and
yeah.
You know, they can bring it home and have a good old time.
Been a lot more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, those got to be good ways to sell it.
It is.
Easier for you.
Yep. Come in, pick it up, and... I don't know. It's you get a whole 6-barrel, but that's 40 pints, so that's good for one party.
So true. Well, we're just about out of time here, so this is a good talk. Wow, a lot. It's always easier when I got two, especially when it's a father son on top of it, right? So, because you're more polite then, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No,
you kind of have to be polite, right? Because you're going to hear about it forever if you're not. So I'm gonna play a quick little promo, and then when that promo's done, we're going to kind of wrap this up.
Sure.
So I got a great friend that runs this other podcast, and I'm going to play a quick little promo for it, and then we'll kind of wrap up the show here. All right, so clearly that's a professionally produced podcast. That's what they would sound like, right? So those two are real good friends of mine now. I've been on the podcast. I've even helped co-host before. So somewhere on that, when they're talking about everyone that's been on the podcast, should have said, and Steve of Motor City Brew Tours
there
was on the show, right? Yeah, yeah, no doubt, right? Nice people, though, and we've been kind of sharing back and forth on each of our shows, little promos like that, just to prove to listeners out there that I know how to cue up something else on here and not talk. The last show
I did it live here.
I totally did, right? Like I had it all on there ahead of time. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. It totally sounds better than all of our voices, I'm sure, because Seth comes from a lot of experience in the radio industry. So anyway, great show. Go to thedebrief.com and learn more about them. They're a weekly show that runs. So Dean and Dan, the Downey family from Dearborn. I can't say all that real fast, but that's definitely the story. I want to thank you guys for coming on the show today. How fun.
Yeah.
And if people want to get more information about your brewery, what should they do?
I mean, we're all over. We got a website, but no one really goes in there. It's mostly like the socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram. We're on YouTube now, Twitter. Probably our most easiest way to find us is Instagram, Facebook, and I think YouTube is going to be
the next upcoming. Downey Brewing Co.
Yeah, Downey Brewing Co. That's our handle, and on Instagram, and then Facebook. Also, just search for Downey Brewing Company, or it's Downey Brewing Co.
or DowneyBrewingCompany.com. If you decided you want to be so old school, go to the website, right? And you guys are open Wednesday through Sunday. You open from Wednesday through Saturday, 4 to 10, and Sunday typically 1 to 5.
Yep.
Unless there's special events going on, you can check out the socials for any of those things. Yep. I want to thank you both for coming on, and everyone, you should go out and check out their beer. Next month, I have another great brewery on whose name I can't remember what I said I have on next month. I either have the guy from Fourth Coast Cider Works or another brewery. I don't know. Horrible host that I can't remember what I have on. But stay tuned for episode 24, taping in June, and we'll play it shortly after. But come look for this episode and go to DowneyBrewingCompany.com to learn more about great beer being made in Dearborn. Thanks for listening.